students. Today we are going to talk about epilepsy and cognition. First, of course, the definition. Well, you can read it here. It's a chronic condition characterized by a tendency towards recurrent seizures. And those seizures, they occur as a result of an imbalance between certain acids in the nervous system and glutamate. So it has to do with an imbalance of all kinds of systems in the brain. And that decreased inhibition, so it means when there is an epileptic seizure, it leads to excitement and, of course, to neuronal hyperexcitability. Nevertheless, the exact mechanisms underlying this imbalance are unknown. Now, yeah, we are getting used to it, that when you talk about the cause of disorders, then we are very soon arrived at important hypotheses, but no clear-cut insight in the exact mechanisms. Anyhow, we have the, you can see here, the brains, and suppose there is the origin of the seizure is here, then it has all kinds of consequences, neurological consequences, cognitive consequences, and also social, because when there is a seizure, then it may lead to uncertainty, lower self-esteem of people, and it may, of course, then also lead to mental problems. What are the consequences? Here you read the word seizure. And I know that the layman is thinking of people who are, when they have a seizure, that they are, let's say, crawling on the floor, going to the left, going to the right, and that you have to put something into the mouth to protect that person is not biting his tongue off. And of course, these things can be part of the clinical characteristics. On the other hand, there are also seizures you can hardly see. And in order to understand this, you read here the word preictal, and that means before there is a seizure. And then ictal, that is the recording during a seizure, and then there is a period after the after the seizure, and that is what we called post-ictal. So here it is pre-ictal, then we have the seizure, that is here, and this is what we called post-ictal. And the point is that those seizures can be very small, very little in time, maybe only half a second. And this is what you can see at the behavioral level. This is in the Dutch language. This is the name of a girl, Rosa. And Rosa, she is very, and then the person is repeating itself during the seizure. And then Prachtig, that means beautiful. So part of the sentence is intact. Rosa is, and here it comes, a repeating of what she has written. And then it continues in a normal way. Well, you can maybe understand that if those sizes are small, but they happen time after time, that at least those people may give the impression of being absent, not listening when they are at school, in the classroom. And teachers might think that those people who have those small sizes, that they are having ADHD because they are at a certain moment away with their mind, just for a second, then they return, then they are again away of it. So what you learned here is that when we are talking about sizes, then it is not only those heavy attacks, but they can be very small, and they can give the impression that those people are in fact suffering from ADHD during to the absence. And at the behavioral level, it may lead to the same kind of repetition of the error. It is as if the machine stops. Hail, hail. Here we have the incidence of epilepsy in different ages. And we have data from the USA, from Sweden, Iceland, Italy, and Finland. And then you can see that here, when life is starting, there is a huge amount of people who suffer from epilepsy, and we call this part congenital causes. You know this word already, congenital. It means that the problem started just when life was started, so that is congenital. And then you see, as a function of age, that there is a dip, and here there is a huge increase again of the problem. And here we talk then about acquired cases. We already have discussed the term acquired, so it could be the result of an accident, for instance, and that is different from when it is starting, when life starts. So here we have the age, here we have an overrepresentation, and here again an overrepresentation, but the cause is different, acquired versus congenital. There are, of course, countries who don't show this incidence, like for instance, in Italy. So there are a huge amount of congenital cases. So here, there is no difference with Italy and other countries. But here you see that when it comes to acquired causes, that the Italian population is different in its distribution. And here is a question mark. So nobody knows at the moment why this is the case. Here we can read the causes of symptomatic epilepsies. So there are all kinds of epileptic types. This is one of them. So this means that it's connected probably by genetic neurological causes, and then in different age groups. And then you can see again an overrepresentation in youth, and especially when it comes to congenital. And here you see other causes, cerebrovascular causes, trauma, so that could be the result of an accident, a tumor, infections, and here we are talking about an age factor. And it is, of course, the case that the age factor is more pronounced here and very much pronounced in elderly.
Could I have a question?
Yes, of course.
Is the trauma as a one-time incident, or could it also be like long-term trauma, like living a traumatic or violent environment?
I don't think so. I think that what is meant here is the result of an accident.
Okay.
When you talk about violence at home, I could imagine that when a child is, let's say, hit tremendously on the head, and it falls even with the head on the table, so to speak, that it could lead like an accident.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that.
Okay, thank you.
Here we have the modern classification system. And throughout the years, we already have seen it with respect to ADHD and also autism, that the nomenclatura is changing all the time. And that also holds for epilepsy. So there are different seizure types. So it could be focal, and that means the left hemisphere or the right hemisphere. It could mean occipital behind or frontal, so on parts of the brain, and that is then called focal. Generalized, it means that both hemispheres are involved, compromised, so the left and the right hemisphere. And you can also see that there is a type which seems to be difficult to describe in terms of where the seizures are taking place, and that is then simply now defined in terms of being unknown. And here we have then the epileptic types. It's again focal, generalized, and even the combined type is possible, as it seems. And here we have unknown. And here we can see something about the cause. The etiology is a different word for cause. So it could be structural, that the brain itself, that there are reasons why it leads to discharges, to an imbalance due to structural issues. There is a genetic component, and here we have again infections, metabolic system could be involved. I think about PKU, the immune system could be involved. And here we have, again, the word unknown. So epilepsy is, in a sense, a network disease, not only a symptom of local brain abnormalities, because focal epilepsies do not always seem to respect pathophysiological boundaries. So the term focal, it exists, but at the same time, it seems to be that it is not so easy to specify it, because even an occipital or a frontal epilepsy could also be taking place in other brain areas. And then we have, of course, the comorbidities, and we have discussed a few comorbidities like cerebral palsy. Many people with cerebral palsy, they also suffer from epilepsy. And here we see that the prevalence of epilepsy is connected with other neuro impairments. So what we see with the ADHD and autism, that there is a lot of overlap, a lot of comorbidities. Well, the same takes place when we talk about epilepsy or other disorders. And cerebral palsy is one of them. And we have discussed that earlier. Do you remember when we were talking about event-related potential research? And this is an umbrella term describing non-progressive brain lesions involving motor and postural abnormalities. Well, we have discussed this. And then another comorbidity, so to speak, is mental retardation. So people with an IQ level below the 70. There are, of course, more comorbidities, but these are two comorbidities which are not seldomly. So what is the goal of the treatment in children? Well, let's say the goal is freedom from seizures, or at least a decline in the frequency. And secondly, the second goal is to support, to protect important areas of the development. When we talk about motor behavior, when we talk about social behavior, and also with respect to cognition. So the treatment is first freedom of seizures and the protection of other skills. Here we talk about recovery. It might be the case that children, people, recover. It could be spontaneous recovery. Well, we also have seen that in ADHD, for instance, that about half of the population is growing out of the problems. And when we talk about epilepsy, it seems to be about 20% of the people. Then we can say that in about 55% of the people, the problem is treatable, which means here you have a whole list of types of treatments, drugs, neurosurgery, stimulation of certain parts of the brain, a diet, and there are also psychological interventions. So in 55% of the cases, the problems are treatable. But in 25% of the cases, the anti-drug, those anti-epileptic drugs are not reducing to a satisfying extent the amount of seizures. Seizures are not arrested. And here is a definition. Then we talk about at least one seizure every month. So I repeat myself, there are people who are lucky that the problems are overcome. In the majority of people, the problems are treatable, but in a certain percentage, the problems remain. And here you find the definition of at least one seizure every month. What about the medication? Well, we can say that it does not cure the epilepsy. It suppresses the seizures. And as a result, there is a positive effect on learning, on behavior. And unfortunately, in about 25% of the cases, the medication may lead to negative side effects. And in practice, it also means that those people with epilepsy, they are monitored quite often in hospitals, specially equipped for epilepsy. At least that's the way as it goes in the Netherlands, but I think it must be the same here in Finland. So intensive monitoring in order to balance between arresting seizures and controlling side effects of the drugs. Now here you have an overall picture of the factors which are contributing to cognitive impairments in people with epilepsy. And then when we talk about the etiology, the cause, then is it the left or the right hemisphere? The nature of the pathology? So there is a difference. Are we talking about single or multiple lesions? What about genetic factors? So that is all involved. And here, this we have already discussed a little bit. Are the seizures focal? So once again, although it is difficult to say which part of the brain are involved, nevertheless, it could be limited to one hemisphere or one part of the hemisphere. Then we talk about focal, and here we have generalized, which means that the two hemispheres are involved. The age of onset and the duration of the epilepsy. Now, yeah, and we have already discussed this. The ictal and interictal discharges, these are the subtle changes in, let's say, the awareness of people. Then, of course, the drugs itself, it might have a negative effect in 25% of the cases. We have discussed this. And then, of course, there are also all kinds of psychosocial factors involved. Self-esteem, family factors, educational opportunities, public attitudes. It all counts with respect to impairments related to the cognitive problems in those children. A lot of studies are taking place focused on the treatment, focused on the cause, focused on the type of seizures, etc. But they have quite common problems, so to speak, design problems, methodological problems. And that could be the reason that the results of those cognitive studies, that they are quite variable. That means that, some studies report this and other studies are reporting something else. Let's have a closer look about the type of problems in those studies. And we take as an example recent studies carried out in Tampere University Hospital and the University at the Tampere University Hospital and the University of Tampere. And this is the first author. And she compared, let's say, older children, so in the age of 7 to 15 years, against younger children, age 3 to 6 years. And as a dependent variable, she was using the NEPSI, which is an often used instrument in the clinical practice. So let's start with the older children. What is the main finding using the NEPSI? Well, here we have the norm. And here we have all kinds of abilities, like attention. We have visual attention, auditive attention, short-term memory, auditive memory, now long-term memory, motor functioning, information processing, verbal comprehension, non-verbal comprehension. So these are all important skills we use in daily life, we use it in school. And the main finding here is that in the old age group, practically all these skills are intact. You see, they are, this is one exception, this is one exception. But overall, we can say, well, children, when they are older, getting older, they are doing it quite fine. So now I go out of, yeah. And here we have the younger age group. And here you can see that there are huge differences in the younger age groups with respect to attention, with respect to verbal memory. Yeah, here we have the norm again, and here we have the control group. So there was a norm group, and then there was a control group, and here epilepsy only. And then you can also see here that there are differences. So the younger, the worse the situation is with respect to cognitive and motor functioning. And that is, of course, against that Kennett principle we have discussed weeks earlier. And that principle was suggesting when it is your faith to have a problem with respect to brain functioning, you can better get it when you are younger, because then the system may react in a nice way and functions can be taken over. Well, we have discussed that. But you see that this finding is against the Kennett principle, because the old age group forms about the norm. It is, of course, the under limit, but it is, yeah, let's say, close to the norm. And especially the younger age group, they show all kinds of problems. There is a second example of this Finnish research of recovery effects when getting older. And these were children with temporal lobe epilepsy, so focal epilepsy. And here we have the children, the childhood onset, and here we have where the onset is in adults, and here, of course, the control group. And here, this is one aspect of the IQ, naming, head of fluency, verbal memory, and non-verbal. Then you can see that all those scores in the younger age group are lower in comparison to the adults. It goes from 90 in children, 100 in adults, and here 47 to 52, etc., etc. So again, here it's shown that adults are better off in comparison to children. Why is that? Why more deficits in younger children against older children? Now, yeah, the duration of the epilepsy, that in younger children the seizures could be more heavy, more often severe, more often symptomatic. So that means that there is a cause, for instance, a genetic cause, and that the immature brain is more sensitive. Well, that is what we also learned when we met for the second time, that there is a rule of thumb, that that is what is moving in that sense, maturing. It means that at that moment, those parts of the brain which are maturing are also more immature and are more sensitive. Well, and when we talk about the early age in comparison to adults, well, that is, of course, the moment of rapid motor, social, and cognitive development. So these findings are against the principle we have discussed, the Kennett principle. Then this is a very interesting sheet, I would say, and that also needs some attention. The question is, what causes what? What is the dependent variable? And what is the independent variable? So we are used to say, well, when we talk about brain dysfunction, then we may think that the seizures, and epilepsy is of course defined in terms of type of seizures, etc., we have discussed it, that the seizures as such are producing cognitive learning and behavioral disorders. So that is one way of reasoning. We have brain dysfunctions, we have seizures, and the seizures are leading to problems at this level. The other way of thinking, and that is a dispute still in the field of epilepsy, I think, that is that we have brain dysfunction. And one symptom of the brain dysfunction are the seizures. And other characteristics of the brain dysfunction are the cognitive learning and behavioral disorder. So once again, here we have that the seizures are the origin of these problems. And in this model, the seizures are seen as symptoms like the symptoms here. So the discussion, one of those discussions in the field of epilepsy is, to what extent are the seizures determining the problems here? No. Is it so that those epileptic attacks, the ictal periods, during those ictal periods, so we can talk about half a second or even smaller or a little bit longer, that these are the moments that the brain EEG is clearly dysfunctional. However, in many people, the brain EEG continues to be dysfunctional also between seizures. So then it is not only during the epileptic attack that the brain is dysfunctional. No, also when the person has no seizures, in many people it seems that then also the EEG discharges are dysfunctional. And the issue, now I repeat myself, whether these interictal discharges cause cognitive impairments, well, that has been put high on the scientific agenda. So it is assumed that is then one of those assumptions, and that assumption has been put forward in 2004. So maybe I know, that there is now more insight, but anyhow, this expert in the field of epilepsy, he assumed that these interictal discharges have a mild decremental effect on alertness and mental speed and may accumulate over time, resulting in chronic problems, in higher cognitive functions. So here, what is hidden is the assumption that the more seizures, and the more seizures then over time, has a decremental effect. So when the amount of seizures could be limited, then it may have a less negative effect on the cognitive development in people in comparison to when persons are suffering from many of those seizures. So that is what it says here. So when we return to the issue of brain dysfunction, whether these are, let's say, relatively independent problems, then it seems, at least that has been put forward, that it depends on the severity of the seizures. When the severity is high, then the seizures may also lead to more pronounced cognitive learning and behavioral problems. Okay, we still have a few things to say, and we concentrate now on one special form of epilepsy, and that is in children, pediatric epilepsy, and we talk about focal pediatric epilepsy. And one of the issues is that when we talk about cognitive functioning, then many studies have focused on temporal epilepsy. Yeah, this is a part of the brain. It is focal epilepsy. The reason why many cognitive studies has focused on temporal epilepsy is simply because of the fact that this occurs more often than the other focal epilepsies. But the question at the same time is, is it now so that the findings of these studies on temporal epilepsy, are they the same as the problems we find in other focal epilepsy? For instance, children with frontal epilepsy. And children with frontal epilepsy, they seem to be quite vulnerable for developing brain behavior disorders. Frontal lobe epilepsy, FLA, frontal lobe epilepsy, it accounts for about 20 to 30% of all epilepsies, and the average age of onset range from 4.5 years to 7.5 years. This type of epilepsy is of importance also when you are interested in ADHD, like I am. I did many studies on ADHD. Why? Well, why is it so of importance for me? Because we talk about frontal, and well, we have discussed the frontal lobe in terms of its place in ADHD. So this type of epilepsy is very much of interest of me. And the characteristic is that it has short durations, those seizures, but the seizures are quite frequent. And what makes it also very special is that the seizures are taking place during the night. So when you are testing those children, then you have to be careful that you are not confusing the scores, which could be weak, that you think, well, it is the weak scores are caused by epilepsy. No, it could be simply the result of the fact of poor quality of sleep. Yeah, and a poor quality of sleep that could also be associated with a variety of cognitive problems. This is the type of research of my PhD student in the Netherlands, who will defend her thesis in 1 month now. And what you can read here is the brief, and that is a questionnaire focusing on executive functions. Well, we have discussed that concept. It includes impulse control, it includes planning, organizing, shifting, here we are, inhibition, shifting. It also has emotional connotations, etc., etc. And here behind we have the parent. So the parent was filling in this questionnaire about all kinds of executive skills in all the children who were participating in this experiment. And here we have the teacher, who is also catering information of the children using the same questionnaire, but then meant for teachers. So we have as observants, as information sources, teachers, and parents. And then you can read here, abnormal range, borderline, and normal. And then you can see that there is a correlation. And that all the children here, they are in a normal range. And then you can see that the teachers are a little bit having a different threshold than the parents. And here we have, again, different sources of information. This is a very often used questionnaire in our field. It consists out of more than 150 questions, and it's meant to be filled in by parents. And here it's about the same questionnaire, but it is filled in by the teacher form. And here we talk about behavior. So antisocial behavior, withdrawal, somatic complaints, social complaints, etc., etc. The linguistic, aggressivity. And then again, you can see that there is, of course, a correlation between those two sources, those two different sources. And what you can see here also, that when we talk about frontal lobe epilepsy and we see the type of problems, then having control deficits, having frontal lobe epilepsy, it means that you also have a higher risk of developing behavior problems. And when we were investigating teachers and parents, it seems that parents are reporting more behavioral problems in the children, and teachers are tend to report more problems on the executive functioning. So it is more, let's say, the cognitive part of functioning. There are significant correlations between all the sources, but those correlations are low. And you can see it here, you can see it here at home, that only part of the correlations, which having an asterisk, they are, let's say, statistically significant. The last slide I would like to show you here is that the working memory is intact in those children, where only two small parts of the working memory that showed some delays. But in principle, we can say that the working memory is intact and that the executive functions in these children are delayed. And that is be seen by the parents, and it is seen also by the teacher. We have a break now. I have to change my file. I hope I am successful in that. So I see you in 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Resolve this issue now. So, I think we close this file. How to do that? Yeah. Save. Oh. Yes. Oh, and now we go. Go to the other one, so here. And then here. And then, go here to here. Yeah, development on our own here. And now we go to Spina. And now we have to go to here, share screen.
Very good. Because I pressed then this.
Yeah.
And this is correct.
And now we have to go there. Yeah. Yes. Hi.
What a disappointing issue.
This is awful. Oh, my God.
So let's continue with another and the last subject of this course, Spina Bifida and Hydrocephalus. Before the break, we were talking about epilepsy, and maybe you became aware of the fact that in the research we have talked so far, most of it was very clinically oriented. So the tasks used were clinical instruments like the IQ naming tests, fluently tests, verbal tests, non-verbal tests, and they are totally different than the tests we have discussed earlier in this lecture. So again, when talking about spina bifida, it will be more clinically oriented, which means that the tasks used are having norms. Okay, go to the second. So here we have a child having spina bifida, and this was one of our first problems we have discussed during this course, the closing of the tube. Well, in this type of patients, the closure is not completed. And here we see a child with a spina bifida. And here we have the thorax, and it consists out of four different parts, and all those parts are connected with certain issues. So you can say, well, the higher the problem is located, the more cognitive problems are involved, and this is lower and lower. So here we can talk about problems with toileting. The bladder is not functioning well. Sexual behavior. And the higher you come, more and more cognitive issues are involved. And here we see designed the problem. There are three different types. The most severe form is the spina bifida cystica with myelomeningocele. And this is the second severe. And this is the most common form. And it is at the same time the most mildest form. So it depends. Here we have a degree of severity. And here again, you see how the problem goes. Loss of B. splatter, bowing control, lack of sensation, partial or complete paralysis of the legs, weakness of the hips, development problems common, although IQ could be close to the norm. It doesn't go down. And here. This is an phenomenon that is most of the time the case. It's often associated, spina bifida, with Arnold Chiari too. And that means that here the cerebellum has collapsed and is being here. It has to be higher. And in about 90% of the cases of Arnold Chiari too, those people develop hydrocephalus. What does it mean? It means an imbalance between the production and absorption of cerebrospinal fluid secondary to some other pathological event or structural brain anomaly. And due to this imbalance of the cerebral fluid with respect to production and absorption, the fluid is accumulating within the ventricle system and pressure is exerted on the brain. And here you see the clinical symptoms of hydrocephalus. It is a downwards deviation of eyes. We call that a sunset gaze. And here you can see how much pressure there is inside and that the head is absolutely much bigger, as you can see, than normal. We have cerebral fluid, and there is, of course, a certain amount. Here you can see in the neonate, so in the baby, and here about the amount in the adult. And that liquor is changing 4 or 5 times every 24 hours. And the fluid has, of course, different functions. It protects the brain from the impact of blows. On the next slide, you will see that fluid is protecting because we have the brain, and then we have the fluid, and then we have the scalp. So it is protecting the brain. It also provides a barrier between brain and blood. It supplies important chemicals and nutrients to the brain, and it plays a role in the removal of waste products. And here we have the brain again. Here we have the frontal part. And here we have the absorption that is taking place here. And here are the ventricles. And here we have the stream, so the start of everything. And you can see that this is a very narrow tube, this part. So when this is blockaded, then the fluid can't find its way to here. Yeah, here it goes again. So in many cases, they have a blockage here, but it also can happen here. Or here, of course, you see, so here it starts and then it goes, for instance, this way. So blockage can be everywhere, but especially here in the foramina of Monroe, and it can also, that blockages are here in the absorption. So this is the liquor, and it has all kinds of functions. We have explained it. We have two types of hydrocephalus. we have the obstructive type, and we have the communicating hydrocephalus. This is what happens most of the time, but of course this can also be the case. Anyhow, in all cases we talk about obstruction, either here or in the extraventricular subarachnoid system, which is located here. There are many causes, tumors, cysts. Well, we have discussed the issue of cysts when we were talking about cerebral palsy, brain injuries, blood vessel abnormalities, also infections and malformations of the brain, like spina bifida. We have discussed this also. So there are, I would say, many cases which can lead to hydrocephalus. What are the diagnostic criteria? Well, first of all, we have to know that even small disturbances in the production flow or reabsorption of fluid cause it. And although there are no exact normative values for the pressure in the different ages, we can say that the evens ratio is the ratio of maximum width of the frontal horns to the brain width. So that can be, so when we have the brain like this, then this distance is called the evens ratio. The treatment, it could be shunting to drain, so to lower the pressure, so then they go, they suck away the fluid, and they can also do it via the stomach. And when we talk about hydrocephalus as the disorder, then it is a symptom, it's a symptom again. So we may think that this is the cause. No, it is about the same discussion as we saw with respect to epilepsy. Hydrocephalus is a symptom of a variety of neurological causes. And there is, of course, neuropsychological impact, because the pressure inside the brain, it interferes, among others, with the corpus callosum. We will see that in the next slide. And that is the highway between the left and the right hemisphere. So it is very much involved, the corpus callosum, with respect to communication between the two hemispheres. And it is even the case that about 50% of the children with spina bifida and hydrocephalus have partial dysgenesis of the corpus callosum. So no corpus callosum, or the corpus callosum is not fully matured. Here we have the corpus callosum, and it connects, as I said, the left with the right hemisphere. And it is an essential body with respect to the communication between the two hemispheres. Here we have again depicted the corpus callosum, and it may have different functions. So some of the connections are more motor related, or the connections are more relating emotional issue or cognitive issues. And then depending on where the problem is, the children show a motor problem and or other problems. Here again, we talk about what are the dependent variables and what are the independent variables. So it seems that hydrocephalus as such doesn't make so many predictions with respect to the fallout of functions. It is more the etiology, the cause, determines the developmental status of the child. And this is what you can see in the next slide. So here we have the control group. And they, of course, have all kinds of scores on these types of skills, motor skills, etc., etc. And here you see that it really matters what the cause is. And this is the most severe form, spina bifida, myeloma ocelli, and Arnold Chiari II. And these people are really low with respect to all kinds of scores. And these are much better off than these. So what you have to learn here is that it is not hydrocephalus itself, but that the cause of the hydrocephalus is determining the problem seen in cognitive functioning. In conclusion, vocabulary and reading development are relatively intact, and I will discuss with you a little bit the clinical homogeneity of the samples with respect to relevant neurological factors. Because here again you can see, here we have the lesion level, and here we have subjects. So in this study, 8 participants were involved in the research, which is of course very little. And then here you have the location. And here is one different. This is also different than the others. And here you have the presence of Chiari. Here, this one has it. No. And here we have how many times was the shunting taking place and which side? And how many times had it be revised? Here, 14 cases, 0 cases. So you see that we are not dealing only with a small amount of patients, but that the heterogeneity is enormous. Here, look at the sizes, no sizes. And here we have one person with sizes, so that all is determining the outcome. So when you have only a little amount of patients with such a variety of important variables, then you can imagine that this type of research is difficult to interpret. Nevertheless, the performance data indicate similar percent of correct word recognition. And when we have a look of the fMRI data, so word recognition seems to be quite intact. This is quite spectacular, because when those people were carrying out those language tests, also functional fMRI was measured. And it appeared that in the patient group, there was reduced activity in essential parts of the brain. So if we have to combine this finding with what we say here, that the performance data indicate similar percentage of correct words recognition. So at the performance level, the patient group was performing the same as the controls. And at the same time, they needed less activity for that. And that could be an example of brain plasticity. We have discussed very much earlier in this lecture that it could be that as function of time, less activity is needed for the brains to carry out the same performance. And the same holds for the structural volumes. They were reduced in essential areas, but nevertheless, again, the patients performed the same as the controls in the performance. That is, again, an example of brain plasticity, functional reorganization, which in this case ensured preservation of language ability. So here we have a good example of brain plasticity. What can we say in general? The cognitive development of children, when it comes to prognosis, it depends on the etiology. Is it congenital or is it acquired? The age, additional abnormalities in the brain. When did the treatment start? That is, of course, also an important factor determining the prognosis. And again, a huge variation. What we also have seen in other neurological damages. But overall, children have lower IQs compared to the norm. We have to think about problems like cerebral palsy, but the problems in producing and understanding discourse level language are common. What are the concluding remarks? That regardless of age of onset, hydrocephalus impairs cognitive, emotional, and adaptive functioning, and it is depending on the etiology, so not on hydrocephalus as such. When the treatment is successful, children may have little evidence of physical disability and minimal neuropsychological consequences. Well, this was the course. We went through hydrocephalus, and before that, epilepsy, and we were approaching those two problems by means of clinical paper and pencil tests. And you can see that you can do good research using those instruments. And before that, we were talking about autism and ADHD and cerebral palsy. And we used state-of-the-art laboratory measures in order to pinpoint more precisely the problems. Of course, the course started with explaining why it is needed to have a developmental perspective when we talk about neuropsychology, and we learned something also about the maturation of the brain, the steps needed, and that you can't understand the steps without taking the interaction into consideration between the structural maturation and environmental factors. For those who would like to write a paper about epilepsy or hydrocephalus, you could try to find reaction time research or EEG research. It exists, but it is not so often carried out. Those types of tools could give us a more precise insight in what really happens with respect to the steps of information processing, but it is up to you what your interests are. Well, we still have a few minutes. Are there questions? I don't hear anybody. So it is clear you have to write a paper, 6-7 pages, formulate a good question, and yeah, try to figure out all the pros and all the contras with respect to the statement you make. Well, thank you very much for your attention. It is not easy to follow those courses online. It was also not easy for me to give these lectures online, but we went through it. Thank you very much for your attention. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. It was really, really interesting.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, Jaap, how is everything?
It went okay.